This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger, and good morning to you and good morning to the world here on our weekly get-together Saturday morning on WGN Radio. Coming to you from WGN West in Scottsdale, Arizona, again this morning where right now it's 56 degrees. It does get a little cool in the desert this time of the year. But the main concern in the desert is how dry it is, and concern that the forest fire season could be dramatic again because of all of the fuel in the form of brush and bushes on the ground, and then the tall pine trees and other trees where fire goes up the tree and then the wind takes it, well, places it shouldn't go. But anyway, we'll hope that that doesn't happen, and we'll hope that, as a matter of fact, they're looking for some rain this weekend in the desert here in the valley. But remember, in at Sky Harbor Airport in Phoenix, they measure 8 inches of rainfall a year, and so we did have a third of an inch in a shower about 2 weeks ago, and didn't amount to very much, but at least it was a little bit. So anyway, this morning we're going to talk about a lot that's going on and some things that aren't going on, like the government not writing checks, because we did have the government shut down at midnight last night. I assume they're going to continue working today on hammering out the differences, but I'm going to talk about this political world and playing politics to benefit a pet project or something and let the rest of the country suffer. And that was particularly brought to my attention this week as I sat and for about an hour and a half on an afternoon, middle of the week, watched TV coverage of a very special event in Washington, D.C., and that was the presentation of the Congressional Medal to former Senator and former presidential candidate Bob Dole. So I'll talk a little bit about that coming up, and then the possibility of a major coming together of companies in the global grain marketing industry. We've talked often over the years about A, B, C, and D in grain marketing. That's A for Archer Daniels Midland, and B for Bunge, and C for Cargill, and D for Louis Dreyfus, all major traders in the global community for grain trading. Well, there could be only three instead of four of those companies, because yesterday Archer Daniels Midland proposed a takeover of Bunge. That according to the Wall Street Journal. And it's a move that could set up a battle for Bunge with the Swiss-based rival Glencore. Now, large grain traders, which make money by buying, selling, storing, shipping, and trading crops, have struggled in recent years with the oversupply on the global scene, thin margins that have squeezed core commodity trading operations, including Bunge, ADM, Cargill, and Louis Dreyfus, are having their challenges, and consolidation is seen as one remedy. Last year, Glencore did seek a tie-up with grain trader Bunge in what was viewed as the beginning of a wave of consolidation in the industry. The Journal quoted unnamed sources as saying that ADM had made the approach and that details were unclear. White Plains, New York-based Bunge operates in more than 40 countries and is Brazil's largest exporter of agricultural products, while Chicago-based ADM says it has customers in 160 countries. Bunge did close up 11% on Friday's market activity and made little comment, and ADM says it does not comment on rumors or speculation. Bunge not immediately available for comment. But just as farmers have been facing price challenges for their crops, the same has been happening to grain companies. And so they've expanded into higher margin activities such as food ingredients and even aquaculture to offset weak results and wild swings connected to their traditional business of handling crops. 2014, for example, ADM bought natural ingredient company Wild Flower Flavors for about $3 billion in its biggest deal ever. The company has also expanded into handling healthy ingredients such as fruits, nuts, and, quote, ancient grains. Now, news of the ADM bid is a bit surprising, according to one analyst, given that ADM had been indicating the company's strategic direction was more toward value added rather than the traditional commodities. But here's the deal. Any tie-up would likely face very stiff scrutiny from regulators and opposition from farmers who fear handing more market control to ADM could hurt prices paid for wheat, corn, and soybeans. And the biggest overlap between ADM and Bunge in the United States is in grain origination and oilseeds processing. The companies would probably need to divest facilities in North America and possibly in Europe. So that's what's being talked about in the global grain marketing community as we go into this weekend. An ADM-Bunge merger would also face opposition from farmer groups in key ag markets, including the United States, the European Union, China, India, and Brazil, according to Eric Gordon, a professor at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business. So they've got a weekend to think about it, but if it is going to move forward, it's going to be, I would guess, a slow process because of all of the government rules in the various countries that will have to offer their approval of this possible merger of ADM, which does a lot of its work in Decatur, Illinois, but it's moved its headquarters to Wisconsin, and, of course, the Bunge Corporation. So we'll keep an eye on that. Coming up next week, the folks at Allendale are holding their annual look at marketing and pricing and where prices are going. And so we'll go over those details of the get-together this coming week. And, well, they're doing it now by technology. They won't be sitting down in the same room together, so farmers who want to attend aren't going to have to travel or take hotel rooms. And as I've said many times, farmers grow crops in the summertime, and in the winter they hold meetings to talk about growing and marketing those crops. As a matter of fact, Max spent a couple of days this week in Coralville, Iowa, at the Ag Summit with farmers from all over the country. And Max will be joining us a little bit later on this morning to talk to David Hightower of the Hightower Reports. Always fascinating guest, and I've enjoyed knowing him for a long time. So he'll be joining us a little bit later this morning. This Saturday morning show, and it's 19 minutes after 5 o'clock on this Saturday morning, and we'll be back to Talk about an afternoon this past week that touched me a great deal. When we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. It is 22 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show. And looking ahead to next week, it'll be Tuesday, January 23rd through Thursday, January 25, at the 30th Annual Ag Leaders Conference will be conducted by technology, not in a room where we all come together, but it's the 30th Annual Ag Leaders Conference presented by Allendale. It will get underway on Tuesday afternoon at 2 o'clock with Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated. He'll be sharing his forecast for the 2017 row crop growing season. And then Wednesday, January 24th, the question for the session will be, high yields, are they the new normal? And Rich Nelson and Steve Giorgi and Jim McCormick will all be appearing on that afternoon session to try to answer some of those questions. And then also on Wednesday, January 24th, are we in for a bull ride in 2018? And it should be a pretty interesting session. And you can do it from home, and they've always done a good job with that conference at Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and if you still want to get involved in it, get in touch with Allendale in McHenry. 24 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show. And in answer to a couple of emails, why are you working from Arizona again this winter? Well, I hadn't planned to, but still working with the good doctors at Mayo to overcome a back problem. And so we'll stay out here to get that done. As my wife Gloria says, we'll leave here when your back is working the way it should. And, of course, there are some events and conventions coming up here in Arizona. Later this month, the January 31st through February 2nd dates, National Cattlemen's Beef Association Annual Convention and Trade Show. That will be held at the Convention Center in downtown Phoenix. And so far, they've had pretty nice weather this spring. Late winter here in the desert. Temperatures have been in the 70s, even touched 80s a little bit, and a lot of sunshine. Have seen and visited with quite a few farmers from around the country, but particularly in the northern half of the country where it has been so bitterly cold. So we're coming up to news time, and we'll cover that. And then David Hightower of Hightower Reports will be joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show. I mentioned earlier that the end of the month, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association will be gathering in Phoenix, Arizona. But a couple of other meetings important to folks involved in food production. The American Sheep Industry Association will be holding its annual meeting. No, they'll not be meeting in the same town, same time, or the same town, because you know that sheepmen and cattlemen don't get together. That goes back to the stage play Oklahoma, where sheep people and cattle people were feuding the entire time. But Sheep Industry Association will be meeting in Texas, and the National Association of Conservation Districts will be meeting the end of the month. And they'll be coming together in the same place that Farm Bureau did earlier this month in Nashville, Tennessee. So it's meeting time in the agricultural community, and a lot of activity going on. Well, we'll take a break. And thank you, Roger, and welcome back to all of you. And thank you for joining us here on Saturday morning every week when we talk about the world of agriculture, to me, the most basic and important industry on the planet, because it's the source of the food that keeps us all alive. And so we are delighted to be able to talk every week about agriculture on a big city station in Chicago. Right now, we say welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson, talking a great deal about education, but education from many sources, including travel. The folks at Wink Products Company want to help make your life easier with a family of professional strength cleaning products that really work. Wink Rust Stain Remover is the number one liquid rust stain remover in the country. This professional strength formula dissolves the ugly rust stains on white sinks and toilet bowls, color-fast fabrics, and carpets. This little brown bottle has been around for 69 years, and it's still number one. To learn where to find quality Wink products, check us out at WHINK.com. I spend a fair amount of time talking on radio and television about the need to get an education and how valuable that education can be. And that leads me to the conversation on finding scholarship money. And there is a good deal of scholarship money available to study courses in agriculture. Now, I say this from experience because I was well educated, but it all happened in a one-room, eighth-grade country school in Wisconsin, and only 3 weeks at the University of Wisconsin because I knew I wanted to be a radio TV announcer. And fortunately, I got an education that has enabled me to do that for about 65 years. But probably the greatest education you can get is travel. And I learned that rather quickly after getting into the broadcast industry because I had the opportunity to travel nationally at the beginning, visiting all 50 states eventually, and then on to international travel, visiting 44 countries. And what a great education travel can be. That's why I am so delighted to see more and more farmers taking foreign trips. I noted that over 70 FFA members just recently returned from a two-week trip to South Africa. And what they learned and what they will use in their lifetime ahead. Travel, acquainting you with people who are colored differently, who speak different languages, who eat different food. Great learning experiences and a great education. And I'm convinced if we had more international travel, and I know it can be expensive, but if we had more of it, we probably would have a better understanding of what people in other parts of the world are thinking and wanting to do. So, commodity groups in agriculture who took me along on many of their foreign trade missions. Secretaries of Agriculture took me along on foreign trade missions. Thank you very much. Thank you for the education that helps me understand in a much better way the cultures of the world. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks at 20 minutes before 6 o'clock here on this Saturday morning, WGN Radio in Chicago. And coming up, a visit about markets and the future with David Hightower of the Hightower Reports. Max Armstrong will be sitting down with David. So we ask you to continue to be with us because I think you'll learn something from David, who does a lot of traveling. So we'll get to the visit when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
Well, we had a little bit of a soybean rally to start the year, but there's still not much to get real excited about, is there, David?
No, there's not. And the markets are vulnerable. That period of highest supply is probably not there yet. We see good weather in Brazil, but iffy weather in Argentina. So there are things to prop it up, but we're looking at big supplies in the markets, trying to factor that.
Is that our only hope for anything here, some kind of problem yet in the Argentine soybean crop?
Well, I think it is, and I'm kind of a demand guy, but demand doesn't stop a market on the way down. It supports it and eventually brings it out of the hole, and I think there's reason to be optimistic about what 2018 will bring later this year in prices.
I'll talk about that with you in a moment or two, as well as the demand side, but let's continue to talk about supply and look on toward plantings this spring. I noticed Farm Futures came out with their survey this past week saying their survey of some 900 farmers indicated corn and soybean acreage would be almost exactly what it was, what we planted in the spring of 2017, about 90.1 million acres of each. Were you surprised at that at all?
Well, it shifts the pendulum. I mean, we had them higher than that, and that's part of how we got to these lows. And I think the reasons behind why we might have a shift with the increased sorghum and cotton in some of those areas, that's significant. That's important. Maybe the numbers aren't significant, but at least we're not facing like an unrelenting wall of supply. So I think it's optimistic that they should see a shift a little bit.
Yeah, I'm trying to recall. I think grain sorghum, they indicated, would be up about 2%, cotton up about 5%, spring wheat up almost 7%, responding to the demand for that high-protein wheat, I guess.
Well, and a lot of sorghum's going to China, and they look like they're not going to relent at all on that particular pattern.
Quite often, though, we can see those farmer ideas shift even from this point, even from January on into the time of planting. Farmers do leave some leeway in there, do they not, to respond to the market if the market is giving them a signal at planting time?
Yeah, I think sometimes we anticipate that they'll change, but they're kind of set in their ways, and they have a preference for corn when they're near an ethanol plant, and it just at current levels, it would seem to favor soybeans. Oh, we'll have to see when we come down to the weather. I think the planting weather really decides that shift.
What else is looming out there? I mean, is there anything else that gives us cause to be somewhat optimistic?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've traveled extensively in the last 2.5 months to all these buying locations, large feed conferences, even aquaculture. I mean, a lot of people may think that's a long way off, but you can look around to the actual consumption patterns, and you can see they're coming for U.S. Products. And secondly, we have a very weak dollar, so that's helping us be a little competitive on the world market.
So these were international destinations that you visited?
Correct. Bulgaria, Ukraine, China on two occasions, South Korea. So all those users, they're seeing, we understand that the commodity markets are driven by industrial demand, but we have this global synchronized growth, and the market's not giving credit for how that'll boost demand.
Global synchronized growth, it is there to stay. It's good, solid, rock solid. Will it continue to grow?
Absolutely. And a lot of this was pent up. I mean, we had this financial crisis for so many years. We have huge amounts of stimulus, and they're not going to remove it quickly. So I'm emboldened by the fact that the only thing that's getting overly optimistic is the stock market, because wages are starting to rise. We're starting to see record low unemployment levels in Germany and other areas. So there's signs it's sustainable.
Since you mentioned the stock market, do you think we're up in lofty territory where it's vulnerable now, 26,000 plus?
I don't. I think that the tax reform situation allowed a lot of losses to be claimed last year, and that's going to inordinately push up earnings, and the interest rates are still extremely low. So this global activity, it doesn't just help U.S. companies.
China. I saw the story this week that the growth in China is, no, of course it's not 10% anymore. It's not even 8%. It's not even 7%. Just a shade shy of 7%. The government over there sending a signal, backing things down a bit, right, David?
Yeah, but I'd like to say, look at what they do other than what's posted or what they say. Because if you look at a long list of commodities and look at the January through November import pace, last year, we're still double digits above the prior year in many, many categories. So energy use is up, natural gas imports from the U.S., all those tell me that on the ground they're still moving forward and enough to help commodities.
Am I correct, though? USDA's projections were a little bit too optimistic in terms of soy exports from the U.S.?
They are, but I mean, when you consider what's happening in terms of DDGs, even the ethanol activity, the sorghum pull, you know, a lot of these are just, you can't just look at one component of the feed market.
The feed market, domestic feeding, I mean, we look at hog numbers, we look at cattle numbers, still strong demand there from the livestock sector.
Absolutely. And, you know, you got to take a look back and realize that the percentage of our total production that's being exported is escalating and it's not going to relent.
Meat, you're talking about.
Exactly. Pork and beef. I actually see in my Asian travels, beef is now starting to appear and starting to get a foothold in terms of demand. And the higher price doesn't seem to discourage them.
This puts hog and cattle people into a little different sector now. They have to be a little more worried about what goes on around the world, the geopolitical scene, that grain farmers have worried about for years. Now, pork producers and beef producers have to have that on their radar screen too, don't they?
Exactly. And I mean, pork is a little bit more immune to the ebb and flow of the economy than beef. But you're going to see, again, Chinese currency very strong. Our pork looks attractive to them.
You mentioned the value of the dollar earlier. Do you see it staying at about this level? It was so strong after the election for many, many months. It has slipped back. What's your feeling?
Well, I think it's going to slip further. If, though, the Trump premium or the change in corporate environment in the U.S., we need stronger than expected growth. We need to see our momentum begin to pick up before they'll throw money into the U.S. dollar. And there's also looking as if there's an exodus out of some of the Treasury instruments, which is a big money, and that may drag the dollar down.
Crude oil?
Crude oil, you know, we have a fundamental tightening, not just a balancing, but if you look at stocks in the U.S., 65 million barrels below year-ago levels, running a high refinery rate, and we're still not building our supply with all that extra production from the Bakken area. So we're using it. We're producing a lot. We're using it, and we're starting to export at a fairly aggressive pace, almost 2 million barrels per day.
Exports of ethanol, I guess, shouldn't be forgotten either, right?
Well,
we're talking about energy.
Absolutely, and the clean air effort in both India and China means that the short-term stop gap is to import ethanol, and the longer term is to implement other biofuel expectations. So they've got plans, and by 2020, China wants to be producing as much ethanol as would require 1.5 billion bushels of corn.
Now, you've watched that Chinese situation for a long time. Is that attainable?
I think that they're a year and a half into it already. I think that they just now revealed it, and they don't reveal stuff until it's already been in motion. And I would not bet against them when it comes to these large infrastructure efforts.
Are they burning through that significant stockpile of their own of corn that they've had sitting around over there for a while?
They are, but they're also finding out that there's a lot less quality and usable corn within that supply. And in September, we started to see a few imports here and there. So I think it's not what we think, and I think that might be one of the bigger bullish surprises in 2018.
How about an overall thought on these corn and soybean prices and what we might see in the months ahead for that grower who maybe is still sitting around with quite a bit of old crop stored out there in the bins? First, soybeans. Will we make some more runs at $10 or better?
Well, I think that when you look at the size of the speculative short in the marketplace, we're not at a record in beans. We are at near record in corn. And so that kind of takes away some of that massive downside. And I feel 30, 40 cents down in beans and 15 cents down in corn is going to be the extent of it. Because, again, the markets are futures and they look forward, not backward. So I think they have a lot of that supply factored in there.
The producer will still have to stay on top of the marketings, looking for that brief opportunity when the prices might spike, correct?
Yeah, and I mean, they have to be proactive this year. You have to. This is a year in which you have to take what's offered to you if it's offered to you. If you want to replace your cash sale with something in the marketplace like a call option, call premiums are very cheap on the exchange right now.
Getting ready for the day this morning, I was thinking, oh my goodness, this kind of has a feel of 1983. It's a doggone miserably cold in the wintertime. Relentless cold. Commodity prices are down. Spirits could be very down among growers, you would think. What have you sensed as you've been out there in the countryside? No, this isn't 1983, but what are growers telling you as you visit with them, David?
Well, I mean, they're obviously not necessarily scared, but close to it. I mean, they're depressed. I think the biggest problem is they think this is going to sustain for a long period of time. And I just don't believe that. If you look at a chart of crude oil and bean oil, they're almost exactly correlated. And so the oil market is the most oversupplied commodity market over the last 4 years, and it's corrected its balance sheet. So why can't grains?
Your insight is appreciated, sir. When you come by to visit with us, we always look forward to it. Thank you, David. David Hightower, the Hightower Report.
I talked earlier in the program about the importance of education and the education that you get from travel here at home and internationally. And in my case, I've had the opportunity to do quite a bit of that, but I've also had the opportunity to work with many secretaries of agriculture and many other people in government. That's why about midweek this week, I was scrolling across the TV channels and came across the broadcast from the rotunda in the Capitol building of the honoring of Bob Dole, who served as Senate Majority Leader, who ran for president, and coming from Kansas, of course, was extremely active in agricultural legislation. And I got to know the senator and interview him several times, but as I watched that show, tears streaming down my cheeks at times, as I watched that show, I remembered one incident particularly. And sharing that with you this morning, we go back to when Ronald Reagan had been elected president and was putting his cabinet together, his secretaries of commerce and education and agriculture and all of that. And so I'm sitting in my office at WGN Radio on a winter afternoon. The phone rings. I pick it up and say, Farm Department, Orion speaking. And on the other end of the line, hello, this is Bob. Well, I know quite a few Bobs, but I don't recognize at first this voice. And I said, Bob? And he said, yes, Bob Dole. And he said, I'm working with the newly elected president on putting his cabinet together. And I don't really know much about this hog farmer from Illinois named John Block, but he sounds like a very strong candidate, and so talk to me about John Block. So I spent about 20 minutes on the phone with Senator Bob Dole talking about John Block, and of course John eventually did become Secretary of Agriculture in the Reagan administration. And I had the opportunity to travel with Secretary Block to Moscow for the signing of the U.S.-USSR grain agreement. Significant action in the world of agricultural trade. So I couldn't help but think back to that time when I pick up the phone and hear Orient, this is Bob. And it's an incident I have not forgotten. And, of course, the senator did run for president. I voted for him, but he didn't make it. And, of course, the thing about Bob Dole was he was in World War II in Italy and suffered a serious injury. And he could never shake hands with you with his right hand. He had always had to shake hands with his left hand. Some of the memories that one has of traveling with people who are pretty special and listening to both Democrats and Republicans pay tribute to Bob and working together. And then we come back to the event last night where we failed to come to an agreement between the two parties on keeping the government running. Really makes you wonder how much you can believe from either side of the aisle, because at that tribute to Bob Dole, yeah, it sounded like they were really going to work together for the good of the country. Well, so much for the political comment and memories here this morning. We thank you for joining us, as always, here on the Saturday Morning Show. Max and I have worked throughout the week in covering the world of agriculture. and talk about it here on the Saturday Morning Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.